E1, number 18A.
Then you come to truth, and you feel that that kinetic power is not just a blind power. Like you have in physics, you have, for instance, all the water above the Niagara Falls, a terrific reservoir of power, that potential power. And then you have the Niagara Falls, and then you have really dynamic power, kinetic power, huh? Power in motion. Huh? But that power is blind. It just has no purpose in it, no consciousness in it, it's just blind. Whereas in being, you begin to see that that power as truth is the truth power, or the power of consciousness, a power of consciousness, or conscious power. Power of consciousness, we can write there, or truth power. And then you can even see something more in love, namely that love is that totality we have seen, that wholeness. It's therefore that total power. Love is total power. Actually, I like love as that which takes care of everything, to call it as the power of total engagement. Can you say that, you see? Of total engagement. It's not the halfway-ish power. It's really love that takes care of every little detail. Hmm? A power that doesn't leave out a single opportunity, that doesn't miss a single opportunity. It's a total power, or power of total engagement. Yes? See, so you have, up to now, you have described, so to say, the whole potentialities of your Christ. Namely, that you can see there is first principle as potential power. That potential power doesn't lay latent, it is life, it's dynamic power. That dynamic power is not blind, it is truth, it knows what it wants to fulfill. It's the power of the truth, consciousness, and it is always, as love, totally engaged in what it does, so that we have a feeling every situation is taken care of by that Christ power. And then, really, from this divinely subjective standpoint, it begins to objectify itself. Always when you come in the Christ translation, really, from love to soul, you have some kind of a break. We'll see that all through. Namely, it's a kind of break where the subjective statement begins to objectify itself. Where really that transition from the subjective to the objective begins to show itself. How does it do it? It says in soul, yes, I take that total power. For what? In soul, really, as that power of identification, as the power of identification. You could also call it the power of translating, not transforming, translating, the translating power. Soul is the, I just will, translating power. You know, this is a terrific sense in practice. See, in practice, or in life practice, you have that great question here, always, which says, yes, there is a God, there is a divine principle. But when that divine principle comes down to an individual situation, does it lose its nature? Does it does it only translate part of its nature. And so comes and says, no. You see, that's the great thing, that though soul translates God to the idea, you never lose anything of the identity of the whole. So you have here the power of identification, namely to identify the totality and the total engagement everywhere. You translate it to every situation as a totality of power or of engagement. So that nothing in the course of translation gets lost. In material science, always through translation, some energy gets lost. But here not. It is of the identical nature that the divinely subjective is bringing itself out as the divinely objective. And as it is translating itself to its universe, you have a wonderful sense of spirit that takes that one principle from which it came, that total principle, which says, as soul, I translate the whole of my nature to the idea. You have spirit that comes along and says, okay, I am the ordering power. I bring now order into that whole undifferentiated objective universe. And so in spirit you have a terrific ordering power. You could also call it hierarchical power. Do you know what it means? Actually, these things can only be thought out as one goes over them quietly for oneself and sees. Think, for instance, in a illustration which is never 100% right, but we have some time to use parallels and illustrations, as for instance evolution. You have the whole of evolution. All right, at the beginning there was some time a first motion of life power, of life and its power, first living cell or whatever it was. Did that life power always remain that same life power? Always the same little cell? No. From that first little cell, the whole evolution began to show itself forth. And how? Because that life power, which was in the first little cell, therefore translated in soul, you see, the total life power translated into the objective sense of a living manifestation of life, began to become a terrific ordering power, a terrific hierarchical power, because from one single cell you had a development, no matter if it is through mutation or selection or whatever, a medium, you have suddenly that you could see different classifications. And little by little these classifications, diversifications, it began to diversify itself, say, into the field of plants, into the fields of animals or birds. I'm not quite sure how I think that's the order, you see, began to diversify suddenly, so that very diversified branches out of that one stem became evident. And so we have all these different things, plants and birds and animals and people. But within that diversification, we had classification. We had not just one kind of plants, just one kind of animals, just one kind of birds, just one kind of people, where classification came in. Once classifications came in, and you had classification of trees, oak trees and pine trees and how they ever are called, then individualization came in, so that not one oak tree looks the same as the other oak tree, and finally you have a practically infinite diversification, classification and individualization, so that not one life phenomena looks the same as the other. See, this is due to that something in being which we call the ordering spirit, the spirit blows where it listens, that it can order things. And it does it in a hierarchical way, so that first you have the big categories, then the subcategories, then the underclassifications, subclassifications, under individualization, right out into the last little bit. There must be a hierarchical power at work to do that. Without that fact, which Mrs. Eddy calls that spirit diversifies, then classifies, and afterwards individualizes, we would not have any order in being. We would not have any diversification in being. We would just always have an amorphous looking, undifferentiated looking universe. But spirit is that power that brings order into everything. That therefore is an ordering power in the universe. And naturally we experience that also conceptually, that is in spiritual thinking, in spiritual development. We can see, and you have seen it when you, for instance, read Mr. Dawley's book, now Peggy Brooks' book on Mr. Dawley, where, thank God, she has once laid down the history of this idea so that it is once chronologically stated, that history, so that it is fixed. You can see in that book something very clearly, namely that spirit really is an ordering principle. That out of the isolated, atomistic conception of the realm of ideas which one had before his time, came the first faint order when he began to see that the 7 days of creation constitute an irresistible order. That was the first motion of bringing order into chaos. But you can also see that from that first order, that first order had in itself the spiritual power to bring forth other orders. It brought forth the order of the definition of God. It brought forth afterwards the four orders, the world order, the Christ order, the Christianity order, the science order. It brought forth, quite naturally, without adding to it, out of its own loins, the order of word, Christ, Christianity, and science. Out of that came forth the order of blending ideas. Out of that came the order of structuring a text. Order within order. Order cross-seminated with other orders. Classification within classification. And more and more we began to see order, 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 order. From that point on we could see the whole textbook in its order as a 4x4. Then each chapter in its order, in a sevenfold development. From that time on, that order of the textbook gave birth to other orders, like the Christ matrix, like the Christianity matrix. Afterwards gave birth to the chart, and so on. Can you see what spirit does? Once we really touch on the order of spirit, on the order of spirit. It is that if we have touched the first seed, it has the seed within itself. Just one thing after the other just rolls out of that first seed. And so it is necessary and important that one knows that first seed right, that word order right. Without that, really, all the other orders don't make sense, or nothing is really developing. But you can see that these orders are orders that exist in being. They are not orders that we put on being. It's not something that we were thinking out, that we are imagining, but that they are orders that have their root in being itself. So you can understand now, you see, how here spirit is the ordering spirit, the ordering power, really the hierarchical power, because hierarchy is order on top of orders and top of orders, a whole hierarchy of orders. And so finally we come to mind, because we can see, just as I have shown it with the evolution, that finally every living manifestation is a manifestation that has no equal, and that is called, in the divine, it's called the idea of mind. Therefore, mind really is the manifesting power. See, it's really that which now brings the individual idea to manifestation. And in this way, we end the order, because we have started with that whole potentiality, latent potentiality, in which everything rests, and have seen how that potentiality, through its power expression, is able to bring about the manifestation of each one of the ideas that are embedded in the potentialities of principle. So this is the range from principle to mind, the range from the potential reservoir to the point of mind as individual manifestation of every idea. So you see how necessary and how helpful this is in a treatment. For instance, in a treatment, you can see that perhaps you know not what the individual manifestation should be or may be. And that's good so. We don't need to know it. What we need to know is the law regulating the translation from principle to mind. And so within one's consciousness, though we do not have yet the manifestation of the right idea, we can see that we know the method of it. And so in consciousness we can sit back and see that within principle lies the whole potentiality of principle. Principle wants to express itself at the point of idea. So I get the sense that principle is always ready to use its whole reservoir of principle, and I begin to see life and see that life gives to that reservoir dynamic, expressing power, that it just wants to throw out everything out of that reservoir. You just feel as if now you are going down the Niagara Fall, and you just see how this terrific power just floods the whole situation. But it floods it with truth, with the consciousness of truth, with that power of truth that knows what it knows, that exactly knows how to go about the case, that exactly knows what is the truth about the situation, is conscious already, though humanly we are not conscious of it, but divinely we see that truth is conscious of the situation, And then love comes and says to our mental, to our consciousness, and you know, I love will use everything in order to bring about the right manifestation. I am totally engaged in that case. I'm not half-hearted in that case. Love says, I am wholehearted in that case. And then comes that break of objectification, where you begin to see, yes, and in this total engagement, that power idea is constantly translating and translating itself in an identical way to every situation. It will not lose anything of its true origin, of its potentialities. By the way of translating, nothing gets lost. And soul will identify objectively everything with its divine subjectivity, so that every manifestation, whatever it will be, will have the identical nature as its principle. And so spirit comes and says, yes, and I know how to find my true way, because I am the ordering principle, therefore I will find those channels, those classifications, those subdivisions, those individualizations which are right in order to bring out the true idea. And so mind, I can see that mind, the intelligence of mind, is the power at the point of manifestation. That no idea remains in a state of not being manifested. As we were thinking along this way, we never lost the standpoint of the throne of grace. We never looked at the human. He only looked right always out from the synonymous term, stayed with the synonymous term, but as if he would look down from mountain top, not going down to a situation, but looking down, still sitting on the mountain top and just looking down, always a step further and further down until one comes to the base of it, to the manifestation of the idea as mind. And that is what we can entertain in consciousness, that this is the way how the principle will find its way to the point of manifesting the right idea at the right place. Yes, let's take it that way. So that we have here the divine standpoint. Now, we can go to the next one, to the human standpoint, and see what impact has now that divine standpoint on our human level of experience when we let this terrific power happen in our life. Naturally, it does not let us untouched. It really has a great impact on us. And so when I begin to go through this divinely subjective, objective standpoint, then humanly I feel that I must adjust myself to this Christ impact. And so we get here in the human, when we let it happen, we get here a power sense, which is quite different because it's now the human impact. And I can see that if I begin in consciousness to see that principle is that potential power, then I am going to submit myself to it, and that power is therefore my authority. I have found my authority. An authority is a power. Huh? So, if I'm well advised, I say, all right, I submit myself to that authority. I'm not going to resist it. I'm not going to challenge it. I'm going to accept this Christ power as my authority, principle as my authority. And naturally, when that dynamic power begins to operate as the kinetic power, as dynamic power, as the power, the life power, then I feel that that power in the human has a life effect, namely a generating power within me. The moment I accept principle as my authority, I have accepted principle, and if I accept principle, I have accepted life, and I get a great sense of generating power. You know that generating would be an idea which we would have, or a characteristic which we have under life. You remember? Here we always see if we know our synonymous terms or not. Huh? Authority is an idea of principle. Generating is an idea of life. But we can see it's a generating power only when we take in the human standpoint. Then it begins to generate and generate within us something. You can also call it the invigorating power, if you like to call it, really the propelling power within us. We just feel that life power is taking us and propelling us and generating us and vitalizing us and invigorating us. You see, that flood of life is just taking us right along. It is as if we would jump into a river and then the river just takes us along and we can't swim anymore against the river. We have to go with it. But if I entertain that consciousness of the divine, that truth is the power of consciousness, or a conscious power. A conscious power. In the human, its impact is that its conscious power really acts as a healing power or dominating power. Yes, you say dominating power, yes. Power of dominion, dominating. As a dominating power.